This guy does not need a proper introduction because you could smell his tres flores at the door. Please give a round of applause to the other George Lopez.
Good evening, my name is George and I'm an alcoholic. Just to clarify something, I'm the original George Lopez Gazette comedian. He's younger than I am, so that makes him the imposter. Plus, I was wearing my tantrums before he was. I want to welcome the new guys who announce yourselves as newcomers. I hope you give this program a chance. You got nothing to lose, everything to gain. That's what I was told when I got here. You new people, these rooms of alcoholics are rooms of hope. Because when I got here, March 29th, 1992, I didn't think there was any hope for someone like me. But you newcomers, I hope King Alcohol has done a good job on your ass to where you're willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. That's what people told me when I got here. I'm gonna share with you, just in a general way, what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like now because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm telling you this, Alcoholics Anonymous does work, because I come from a life of violence, gangs, prostitution, drugs, and I wasn't taught by my father for the right from wrong, because he was an alcoholic and a drug addict himself. Eventually he died from it. I was brought up as a poor guy. We're a poor family. But you know, one thing I liked about going to school, it was mostly white people. And because we would take breakfast burritos with beans or chorizo, and we couldn't afford salami or ham or potato chips or Twinkies. So what we did, me and my brother, we would go and trade the white guys for their Twinkies or their ham sandwiches for our burritos. I've worked since age 7. And all the money that we made was given to my mother. My dad, I think we went camping one time my whole childhood with my dad. He wasn't around at all. My dad was kind of type of man who got drunk. They got gone for a week and then come home and slap my mom around. And I came home, I mean he came home one night and he slapped my mom. I saw him slap my mom and I told him, I was about 10 years old. I told him, I hate you. He said, I hate you too. But looking back at it, my father did the best he could with what he knew, the way he grew up. Now, I did scandalous things. I'm not proud of the things I did. I wound up being one of those men who slapped my wife around too. I'm not proud of that, but that was the lifestyle of the Vida Loca, the crazy life, the life where I come from. I didn't know no better. I've been on my own since I was 16 years old. That's when I had my first daughter. She's 50 years old. So I had to grow up pretty fast, really. I didn't really get to do what regular teenagers do. I was good in sports, very good actually. I was a good hardball player. And my mother, she never went to any of my games. If you know anything about baseball, striking out 16 batters in one game, in the hardball game, it's a lot of batters. And eventually I got involved, after I got that first kid of my daughter, I something happened and I had to get away from this town. So I joined the service. And I asked the service people if I could play baseball in the service. They told me, yeah, you could. They lied to me. I didn't even see a baseball there. In 2 months after I joined the service, the California Angels and Cincinnati Reds scouts, they came to my hometown looking for me. And I was told that, and I asked the Army if I can get out. And they go, no, once you raise your hand and you say, I do, we got you. So I got out of the service and got involved. Because of my alcoholism, I got into drugs too. Drugs is part of my story. And the bottom that I hit, I remember the bottom. The last day I drank was at a Motel 6, March 28, 1992. I was in a Motel 6, so three prostitutes. Even being married too, I used to sell prostitutes. Well, being married, I'm not proud of it, but that's what I did. And I was with three prostitutes, two cases of Budweiser, a fifth of tequila, and an eight ball, two eight balls. If you don't know what an eight ball is, don't worry about it. But that day, alcohol combined with the drugs almost killed me. And then the next day, because my wife had left me already, I said, I gotta do something. And I went to this one guy's house and asked him, because he had gone to the VA hospital in Brentwood. And I said, how is that? He goes, he just told me it's up to the individual. So I went to the VA hospital in Brentwood and I didn't know what to expect. And I went there and there was about 45 of us, and I told the counselor, I'm not here to stop drinking. I'm here to stop doing drugs. And the group of eight people, they just laughed at me. But then after about 10 days into the program, then I knew the alcohol was a big problem too. And I stayed there for 21 days. And after those 21 days, they said, you can't leave because they gotta give you a prescription. I go, all right, you can give me some drugs. On my prescription, it said 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, I've never heard of AA ever in my life. But after I came back from 21 days, I stayed with my brother because he had been sober for 2 years. And I was going to meetings. My second meeting I went to, there was this guy. His name's Dave Christie, and he shared, he said he had been sober for 19 years. In my mind, I said to myself, he's a lying son of a bitch. There's no way you can go 19 years without drinking. But here I stand with 31 years, so I know it can be done. You know, also, I would share in a meeting, and I shared how I was a macho guy. I told him, yeah, I'm a macho guy. Then Dave Christie shared after me again. He goes, you know what macho means? He said, it means stupid. And I looked at that skinny guy and I go, he's lucky he's on the other side of the damn table over there. But I kept coming back. I kept going, coming back every day. Didn't know what to expect. After about 30 to 45 days coming to Alcoholics Anonymous every day, I would just watch the people. I would watch who's coming every day. And then eventually I heard this one guy. He was a short guy. I thought he was a white guy, but he wound up being a Mexican because he would share his story. He said he had come from the lifestyle of gangs and violence just like I did. I'll ask him to be my sponsor. So after the meeting, I pulled him to the side and asked him if he would be my sponsor. He goes, why do you want me sponsored? He goes, you don't know a damn thing about me. Actually, he used the F word. And I was within arm's distance. Where I come from, nobody talks to me like that if they're within arm's distance. Because I got priors of putting people in hospitals for fighting. But I didn't hit Fernando. I didn't hit him. To me, I'm looking back, God did for me that one day what I couldn't do for myself. I look at it. And then he asked me, if I had a big book. I go, no. He goes, you know how to read? I go, yeah, I know how to read. He told me to read one of the 12 steps on the wall. And I said, he goes, okay, you know how to read. He asked me he said, are you willing to go any lengths to stay sober? And I looked at him and go, what the hell is this guy going to ask me to do? So I gave him the answer he wanted to hear. I said, yeah. So he said he wanted me to read that big book in 30 days. He said, read that book in 30 days. If you don't have that book read in 30 days, look for yourself another sponsor. Don't waste my time. He told me to go to a meeting every day also. He goes, if you miss one day, look for yourself another sponsor. Don't waste my time. Use the F word. And then he told me to call him every day too. If I miss one day, if not call him, he said, look for yourself another sponsor. He said, you told me you're willing to go to links, I'll go to links for you. He said, he told me my phone number is open for you 24/7. So I called him one day because I wanted to drink badly. It was about 1:30 in the morning. And I called his ass up and I thought, you know what, I feel like drinking right now. He came to my house where I was at. And he took me to Denny's. And we shot the shit for about half hour, 45 minutes. But that was enough just because after that talk, the wanting to pick up that drink had lessened to a level where I can deal with it. How that worked, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. But I kept coming to these meetings. And if you're new and you haven't done those steps, I'm gonna tell you what my friend Dave Christie told me also. He said, don't be afraid of those steps. He said, they're kind, loving, very gentle, and very protective for me and for you. If you haven't done those steps, you don't know what the hell I'm talking about. There's a healing for me when I did those steps. Those steps is what really changed me. And because I started doing a step and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about the change. I started to say, please, thank you, I'm sorry to people. I go, son of a bitch, what are these people doing to me, man? See, because where I come from, you don't apologize to people. I got apologies from you or F you was my... The way I have, the way I talk to people. But I kept coming, and eventually I finished all the 12 steps of the program. And then I started to make some amends to people. My sponsor told me to make amends to my family, so I got all my family together in the living room. And I apologized to them for not being there for them. I told my wife I was sorry for slapping her. And I told her that these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are more important to me than all of you, my family. It was suggested whether or not I do it, that's up to me. And I did. I told my wife and kids that. One of my kids said, why is those rooms more important, Dad? I go, my daughter who's 45 now, she asked me why. I told you, she's the only one that remembers how I was because the other ones were way too small. I go, you remember how I was. You want me to go back to living that way? She goes, no. I go, that's why I have to take care of me first. If I can't take care of me, I can't be there for my kids. But see, that's one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. It has given my kids their father back. It's given my mother her son back. And see, my sponsor, he asked me, when was the last time you told your mother you loved her? My response back was, I've never told my mother I loved her. I love you wasn't said in my household. She never told none of my kids, my brothers. So he said, you know what? Why don't you go to your mom's house right now, give her a hug and tell her you love her, and then give me a call. That way I know you fucking did it. So I went, gave my mom a hug. I told her I loved her, and that's the first time she ever told me, I love you, mijo, she said. And she cried, and I cried. But it's okay for this grown man to cry today. I'm not going to say what Dave Christie said about crying. But I kept going to those meetings. You know, I remember going to a men's stag meeting. Never been to a men's stag meeting in my life. I didn't trust the people in there because I only had about 6 months of sobriety when I went to my first men's stag meeting. And then here comes Dave Christie. He said, "Here, you like some coffee?" He poured it already. I go, "No, I don't want no coffee," because I didn't see him pour it. There was about 25 guys at that men's stag meeting. I thought Dave Christie put something in my damn coffee, and I thought that group was going to sacrifice my ass that night. I came in these rooms sicker than most. But today, most people are happier than most. Now, I believe in God. This one guy, once one of my sponsors passed away about 5 years, and his name was Bakersfield Jack, because he lived in Bakersfield. And about a year before he passed, he said, "George," he said, "as long as you keep God first in your life, the rest of your life will be the best of your life." See, that makes a lot of sense to me today. And as Dave Christie also told me, Dave Christie would say, "The best thing I got going for myself in Alcoholics Anonymous is this relationship with this God and his understanding. I have a loving God of my understanding that I don't understand. The day I feel I understand God, it must not be God, because I'm not that smart to know why things happen, why things don't happen. For example, this one guy, he came to a meeting and he shared how he lost his nephew in tragic death. I forget what he said. And then Dave Christie shared after him, and he said, "Can you imagine heaven without 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds, teenagers, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds? So that helped me in deal with deaths. Like, I lost my dad, and I was 33 years old. And then Dave Christie told me, he said, at least God gave you 33 years with your dad." See, so that's the way I look at things. There's always a positive way to look at the negative. Even when negative happens to me, like I've learned in those rooms, at least I'm alive for the negative to happen to me. Because see, when I do good, happens. When I do bad, bad happens. But even when I do good, shit's still going to happen to me. Okay? But I got a lot of acceptance in my life today. Acceptance plays a big part of my serenity level. For example, however my life is right now, however any relationship is right now for me, however my financial situation right now, however my physical status is, whatever may be going on with me physically, no matter what's going on with my life right now for me, that's exactly the way it's supposed to be right now for me. Because if it wasn't supposed to be that way, it wouldn't. That's why I say it is what it is, whatever it is, whenever it is. Okay? And acceptance doesn't necessarily mean approval for me. I don't like a lot of shit that happens to me, but I need to accept it so I can find a piece of surrender again. You know, I took my kids camping to San Antonio Lake one time, and me and my now, she's 45 years old, she was about maybe 18 back then, and we were in a swimming hole. It was a big, wide open area, about 200 by 200, all open, sandy spot. It was open. And her and I were in the water, about chest level deep, and she stepped on something mushy. I stepped on mushy, and the water, there's mud in there, because I felt it too. I go, "This is mud, let's go over here." So we moved a little ways, and then the patrol boat came by, and his bullhorn told everybody, "Get out of the water." And I said to me and my daughter went to the shore. I said, "I bet you somebody drowned." Here comes two lifeguards were going into the water holding hands. And then they came back out and they asked for volunteers. And I told my daughter, "You know what? I know how to swim." So I volunteered. We formed a C. We held hands. Then we got about chest level deep. Little voice in my head says, kick your foot to the left. I kicked my foot to the left. I felt something. I let go of my right hand. I went underneath the water and I picked up this individual. And I took him to shore. They tried to revive him and they couldn't. And I was all pissed off with myself. Why? Because where I picked him up, that's where my daughter stepped on something mushy. I told myself, if I would have just checked when she first stepped on something, they might have been able to revive him. And then somebody taps me on the back. A little old man, you look like about 80 years old or more. He could barely walk, take six inch strides. He goes, son, he goes, there was nothing you could do. It was his time. And then I turned around and talked to my daughter about 30 seconds, and I would turn around to ask that little old man something, and he was gone. Now, there's no way that little old man could have fucking left that whole big white area taking six-inch strides, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff that's happened to me. Yeah. And another incident blew me away, too. You know, my mother-in-law, her name is Dolores. I never called her Dolores ever in my life for the 16 years that I've been with my wife. And she was on dialysis. She was diabetic. She had yellow jaundice. She was in the hospital. She couldn't talk to you. When she opened her eyes, she was a yellow. And I was there for support for my wife. And I was sitting in the waiting room. And then my wife says, are you ready to go? I go, yeah, I'm ready. And then the little old voice in my head says, now would be a good time to make amends to your mother-in-law, because she can't hear you, she can't see you. All right. So I told my wife, you know, I gotta go to the restroom. I lied to her. I went down the hallway, to the right was to the restroom, to the left was my mother-in-law room. So I went to the right, stood there for about 10 seconds, and I peeped my head around the corner. My wife wasn't looking, so I dashed across. And I went up to her bedside, and I never called her by her name ever in life. I said, Dolores. And that woman, she turned toward me with her eyes wide open. And I told her, Dolores, I apologize for the way I treated your daughter and you. And she even spoke to me. She said, I forgive you, George. And after she said, I forgive you, my sister-in-law walks in, goes up to the bedside. My mother-in-law, she shuts down. See? And that blew me away right there. But see, to me, God woke her ass up so I can apologize to her. Made the recommends, you know? And my mother, she left the hospital 2 weeks later, and then my wife asked her, do you remember George going? I remember everything he told me. Right? Those are the kind of things that have happened to me. So who God is, I don't know, and I don't care. All I know is when my sponsor told me, when I first got sober, he said, pray for the obsession, for your alcoholism, in my case, my drug addiction, go away for 7 days. And before I could ask him why, he goes, don't even ask me why. He said, just do it. I did it. I prayed for my alcoholism and my drug addiction go for some way for 7 days. I haven't had alcohol or drugs since day one. I don't know what it feels to relapse. Nor do I care to. You know why? Because I stay close to the meetings and I hear, because I take inventory of people when you share. If you don't want me to take inventory, don't share. Because there's good examples and good bad examples. Yeah, at the beginning of this meeting, there were some Al-Anon ladies in here. When I've learned in AA, if you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand me, and I'll never understand you. And if you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink, and I'll never understand why you don't. I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's changed my life. Prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've never had a checking or savings account ever in my life. And I was 35 years old when I got to AA. Today I've got both. I'm self-employed today. And you know, I hear some people say, I don't deserve what I got. I deserve everything I've got. Because if I didn't deserve it, I wouldn't have it. And I've learned that just recently, within the last 5 years. And, you know what, you new people? I come here for you. And I come here for me. Because if I have to stay close to the rooms of AA and be available for the newcomers to give back freely, which is knowledge of the 12 steps, to live the life I live today, that's okay with me. Because I was taught real early, 1 hour a day is not asking much for the 24 hours that I get to live. Because for my first 6 years, I didn't miss one day for my first 6 years of sobriety. See? And I'm very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go inside the prisons, I get to come back out. I've been doing that for over 19 years, but it took 10 years for them to accept me. I was gonna quit, and my sponsor, hey, you're gonna quit applying? I go, what's the reason? Hey, he goes, if and when you get accepted, it'll happen in God's time. So it took 10 years for me to keep applying, and I go inside the prisons. Okay? It took me 4 times to pass my contractor's license. You know, three times I failed. I took my sponsor with me one time. The last time I failed, I was pissed off. And I told I got my keys. I threw my keys at my sponsor. I go, you drive, you son of a bitch. He threw the keys back at me. He goes, no, you drive. He goes, what are you going to do, quit? So I kept looking up, and I look up a crash course in Bakersfield. And it was the same questions and everything, and the same identical math problem. But the math problem over there in Bakersfield, the formula was different. They gave me the wrong formula over here every time I failed, because that's where I was failing, the math. So I finally passed it, but I took those people to court, and I got my money back. See? In these rooms, I'm still learning the art of fighting without fighting. I don't fight with my fists no more. See? People in these rooms, some people used to talk about me a lot in these rooms. In fact, they still do. But it doesn't bother me anymore, because it used to bother me at first. My sponsor goes, he goes, is what they're saying true about you? I go, no, it's not true. He goes, then why give those people power over your feelings? He said, do you like feeling the way you feel when you do that? I told him, no. He said, then stop fucking doing it. There's so many valuable life lessons I've learned in here. See, you new people, I can take it to the bank because I prayed this morning. In fact, I prayed before I came over here. I said, God, ask and pray that when I talk to these people, I share your will with these people, God, not mine, and the power to carry that out. That's where step 11 has taken me. See? And I don't know one person who prayed in the morning who was sincere who relapsed that same day. It won't happen. Because the ABCs tell me on chapter 5, God could and would if you were sought. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, today, this is part of my acceptance. See, I will, for today, whatever happened to me today was supposed to have happened. Because if it wasn't supposed to happen, it wouldn't have happened. And however things turned out for me today, that's exactly the way they were supposed to have turned out. Because if they weren't supposed to have turned out that way, they wouldn't have. Whatever I feel I should have accomplished and I didn't, it wasn't supposed to have. Because if it was supposed to have, it would have. And these are lessons that the rooms keep teaching me. That's why I stay close to those rooms, because I get spiritually fed in those rooms. I get good input. That's why the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. I don't ever want to forget where I come from. I don't ever want to forget why I get to enjoy family the way I do today. Well, family's everything to me. Shit, I sing happy birthday along with everybody. I never used to sing happy birthday. I remember my first sober birthday, my sister gave me a birthday card. And she said, read out loud, brother. And it said on the birthday card, she goes, it said, God finally answered my prayers and gave me my brother back. And I cried when I read that damn birthday card. But the things I've learned here, You know, I even went to Santa Barbara Business College. You know, and it was, and it was raining, so I had my black trench coat. So I would eat lunch by myself because I was about the third oldest guy there. And I would eat lunch by myself, and there was a clothes rack behind me, so I hung my trench coat on the clothes rack. And I went back to class, and then I go, shit, I forgot my trench coat. And I asked the instructor if I could go back. I go, yeah. I went back there, my trench coat was gone. I go, shit. In fact, I said in my mind, let me catch somebody wearing my damn trench coat. But there was a sign on the clothes rack, it said, free clothes. And I didn't know how to handle that. So I told my sponsor that. He said, well, why don't you go tell the office, make a flyer, so they can send it out to different classes. So I did. I followed his direction. 2 days later, I got my trench coat back. See? So many beautiful things continue to happen to me. And to me, for your new people, a lot of coincidences used to happen to me when I was real early in sobriety. Today, they still happen, but they're not coincidences for me. Today, I call them God incidents. You call them whatever the hell you want to call them. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And it's about almost time for me to close up. So with this, I'll say it's because of rooms like this, people like you, and most importantly, because it's this loving God of my understanding that I don't understand that I found these rooms, I could have missed it all. Thank you.
Please give George Lopez another round of applause.